Welcome, everybody, to this special edition of Yahoo Finance Live. I'm Alexis Christophorus, live here in Times Square, which is the crossroads of the world and home to the Great White Way, Broadway. After 18 months of being shut down, the curtain is finally going to rise tonight inside Broadway theaters. And for the next 2 hours, we are going to talk to actors, producers, and other business owners about their Herculean effort to put the lights back on here on Broadway. Broadway amid the coronavirus pandemic. But you know what? There's another big show going on today. That's happening clear across the country with Apple, which just started its live streamed event. It's expected to unveil a bunch of new products, including the new iPhone. And we have our tech editor, Dan Howley, keeping an eye on that for us. And he joins us now. Dan, I know it just started, but what can you tell us?
That's right, Alexis. We're expecting to see a slew of new product announcements here, or virtually, and that's including the iPhone 13. That's supposed to be the next generation iPhone. It will feature a similar design to the iPhone 12. It's expected to get a newer processor that's par for the course, as well as a faster display, 120 hertz refresh rate. That means better scrolling, better gaming. Everything should look smoother, and improved cameras on the Pro versions. There also may be satellite communications for reaching out to emergency services when you're out of cell range. There's also talk of a new Apple Watch, the Apple Watch Series 7. That would feature an all-new design similar to what you have from the current iPhone, with a squared look and a flat screen rather than the rounded display that's on the Series 6. And then we're also looking out for new AirPods. They could slot in between the original AirPods and the AirPods Pro, having a look similar to the AirPods Pro, but no adjustable tips for your ears. And then finally, there's talk of perhaps a new iPad mini, something that I would really like to see, and a new MacBook. But those are kind of on the outer edge of the announcements. We'll be looking primarily at that new iPhone and that new Apple Watch.
All right. Thanks a lot for that, Dan. We'll come back to you throughout the 2 hours for more news from Apple. I want to turn back now to the news happening right here in Times Square, because tonight four of the biggest musicals on Broadway are going to reopen after the longest shutdown for Broadway in history. It is definitely an emotional reopening for theater lovers, for the theater community. But remember, Broadway is also big business. Here's just a taste of what's at stake.
All aboard!
They are the blockbusters of Broadway, and tonight it's curtains up once again for Hamilton,
Click, boom!
Wicked, Chicago, and The Lion King, an emotional return after 18 months of theaters gone dark.
Broadway's a heartbeat of New York, and I don't think it ever really sunk in until the pandemic.
It's really one of the defining things of the city.
And one of the biggest economic drivers. In the season before the pandemic, Broadway contributed $14.7 billion to the New York economy, including a record $1.8 billion in ticket sales.
We all just want to be back watching theater again.
We love the theater so much. I've missed Broadway so much. We're just so excited, and I'm so happy to be here.
In this place where art, commerce, and now science collide, the question remains, will the love of theater be enough to bring the crowds back in full?
I think there's just a great determination that it's going to work and that we're going to make Broadway better, not just as good as it was, but better.
Broadway's back, and we're just pumped to be a part of the beginning.
All right, Broadway is made up of 41 theaters, and in just a few weeks, one of those theaters, the Booth Theater, will be home to the revival of Freestyle Love Supreme. It is the improv hip-hop show co-created by Hamilton's Lin-Manuel Miranda, and I am now here with two of the producers of that show, Jill Furman and Jenny Steingart. Thanks so much for being here with us today.
Nice to be here.
First off, congratulations, because Freestyle Love Supreme was just given a special Tony Award. Jill, tell us what that award is for.
Well, every year there may be categories that are not competitive, and so the Tony Committee can decide on a year-by-year basis whether they want to give special awards for anything. And so we are very lucky and feel so blessed to have gotten one this year.
It's an incredible honor. And, you know, for folks who don't know, before there was Hamilton, before there was In the Heights, there was Freestyle Love Supreme. You were both involved in it 17 years ago. Tell me what it's like bringing that show back to Broadway, especially during a pandemic.
Oh, it's so meaningful. I think that in our wildest dreams, the fact that we were on Broadway to begin with was not anything on anyone's list. It was a small show. It's been almost 18 years of doing it together. And to have the opportunity now in this moment where, because it's such a topical, interactive show, that we can bring it back and the group can address what's happening in the world in real time is really meaningful for everyone.
In an entertaining way.
In a fun,
because no two shows are ever alike.
Never.
Because you're improvising off what the audience is saying to you. Give me a feel for what pre-sale tickets are like. What is demand like right now for Freestyle Love Supreme and also for Hamilton, which was a huge hot ticket before the pandemic?
We're doing really well on both shows. There seems to be a real pent-up demand for wanting to come back and see a Broadway show. So we're really excited, and we're excited for new people to come and check them out, too.
I think I agree with that it's been for so long people have been at home and they're so hungry to get back in a communal experience and be entertained. And so we have been very fortunate with Freestyle and obviously with Hamilton as well for Jill that we see people coming out to see the show.
You know, Broadway producers are certainly not risk-averse. You know, it is not a surefire thing when you invest in Broadway. I know that to stage a musical, it's upwards of $10 million. A play is about half that. Jill, are you finding that there is interested money sitting on the sidelines of people wanting to invest in projects?
Absolutely. People are just so happy it's coming back. There's a lot of new material that's being developed that was developed during the pandemic. I think there's a lot of interest. We've got some new people. And we just raised money for Freestyle, and it went swimmingly.
Now, you have a new show that you're going to start getting investment for. Talk to us about that.
Sure. It's a show that's going to start at the Public Theater. It's called Suffs, and it's about the women who got the 19th Amendment passed, which gave us the right to vote, as you know. And, it's a really exciting project.
And I understand it's all female-driven.
It's female-driven, female creator, mostly female creative team, mostly a female or female-identifying or non-binary artists in the cast. It's a pretty exciting, topical show.
That is just awesome. Talk to me about diversity on Broadway. I mean, a lot of people say Hamilton was a game changer in that respect. But how are you, how is the community working to build on that diversity?
Well, I mean, I certainly think it varies from show to show. But I know for sure in the case of Freestyle, that is such a huge part of it's baked into the DNA of the group. Centering voices that aren't necessarily heard from a lot of the time. So I think that our audience has always been deeply diverse, our performers are diverse, and even our producing team is diverse. We have women, we have people of color, our entire team is, you know, all different sorts of folks who are working together to really open up the platform.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about opening up amid a pandemic and the protocols. I'd imagine that adds to the bottom line cost of putting a show on, having to think about these protocols. Talk to me about that challenge and how is the experience going to be different for theatergoers?
Well, it definitely adds to the bottom line because COVID protocols are very expensive. All the testing, we do weekly testing. Everyone involved with the show has to be vaccinated, and they do get weekly tests. And anyone who comes to the theater has to be vaccinated, has to show proof of vaccination, and has to wear a mask while in the audience. And anyone under 12 has to show proof of a negative COVID test. So it's a lot to manage, and of course, safety is our number one priority.
Sure.
But we want to be able to do it, and so we're taking every precaution.
Jenny, Broadway's coming back after its longest shutdown ever. How has the pandemic maybe changed the DNA of Broadway going forward?
It's such a good question, and I mean, I think the jury's still out in lots of ways, but I think that, you know, what we've been reminded of when we've all been apart during COVID is that artists are, the storytelling aspect of it artists, human beings, we look to these artists to help us metabolize how we're feeling, our own grief, our own experiences and emotions. And so I really do think that there's a kind of an intentionality now when people are coming back, that they want to say something, they want to do something that is going to make a difference in the world, even if it means the difference is giving someone 90 minutes of a big smile on their face,
right,
surrounded by other people. That's a really important thing, and I think that that's getting integrated into the way folks are moving forward in the industry.
Speaking of a big smile on your face, Hamilton opens again after 18 months of being dark, but actually it kind of opened just the other night. You had a special opening. Tell us about that, and what did that feel like?
It wasn't actually an opening, but it was an invited dress rehearsal.
Okay.
And so it was a full house, and everyone masked, as I said. And it was made up of people associated with the show, friends of friends. We also had first responders in the house, so anyone who helped us get through COVID, we offered tickets to. And it was an absolutely magical night. It was so full of love and joy, and there was not a dry eye in the house. And I'm just excited for it to happen again tonight. I know for the first paying audience, it's going to be incredible again.
What are you most looking forward to now, Jenny, as Broadway opens up again?
I'm looking forward to having shared experiences with other people, truly. And I actually think we are, as human beings, so resilient. And as much as everyone does feel a level of anxiety going back to the theater, I also think the sense of community is so powerful and is so deeply needed. So for me, it feels a little like, you know, that's like going to church or synagogue, being with your people, being around others, and experiencing a journey together. I really need that personally, and I think other people do as well.
I think we all do. I'm curious if folks within the Broadway community have been accepting of these COVID protocols. Are you getting any pushback? Have things been pretty smooth?
It's been pretty smooth. Again, everyone wants to be as safe as possible, and for the most part, people are adhering to everything. Of course, there may be medical reasons why someone can't get vaccinated or a religious reason, but for the most part, it's gone very smoothly.
Okay, last question to the both of you, to each of you to answer. First, Jenny, to you. A lot of people say New York City really isn't reopened and back until Broadway is back. What does the reopening of Broadway mean to the vitality and economy of this city?
Oh, I mean, the two are so integrally tied together. I think that it is important. It is so important that Broadway reopened because it sends the message to New Yorkers and then to people who will come to New York that we are vibrant, we are vital, we are coming back online, not online as we've all been, but
right,
it's all coming back. And I think that it is a deeply important message to send out into the world that we're here and the art is going to persevere at the end of the day.
Jill, what do you feel about these curtains going back up?
I echo what Jenny said. I am so thrilled. This entire industry was devastated, and it just feels like we see the light at the end of the tunnel. Broadway is the heart and soul of New York City, and the fact that we can open and that there's so much interest, so much pent-up demand, it's a really good harbinger of things to come.
That it is. Jill Furman, Jenny Steingarth. The show is Freestyle Love Supreme. It's a limited engagement. Opens October 7th, running through January 2nd.
Correct.
Thanks so much for being with us. Best of luck.
Thank you so much.
All right. We're going to have much more Yahoo Finance Live right here, live from Times Square, after this.
from Louisville, Kentucky.
We both live in LA right now, but our hearts live here.
I'm actually from Montreal, Canada, and I woke up at 5 in the morning and left my house at 6, did border crossing, and made it here. It took me like 8 hours to get to New York, but I'm here.
My friends and I are trying to see every first performance possible because it's so exciting. So we saw Passover, we're seeing Hadestown. We've got tickets to see Waitress, FLS, Hamilton, you name it, we'll be there.
There you have it, excited folks, ready to be back in the theater. We are live here in Times Square. And you know, dinner and a show, that's the formula that restaurants in New York City have long relied on until the pandemic, of course, shut down theaters and those restaurant doors. Tonight, though, one of the stars of the Broadway area restaurant scene is coming back. Carmine's Family Style Italian Restaurant is going to start filling its 480 seats starting tonight. With me now is Jeffrey Banks, CEO of A La Carte, the restaurant group that oversees Carmine's and also nearby Virgil's Barbecue. Jeffrey, it's great to see you. Tell me about reservations. I'm curious, what does a reservation book look like tonight and in the weeks ahead?
It's been great. We've been closed over, 18 months, almost 557 days. So there's been a little bit of a backlog of people who want to come out and celebrate at Carmine's. Everybody had a birthday. Everybody had an anniversary during this pandemic. And the reservations have been fantastic. You can go to carminesnyc.com. You can walk in. We have almost 500 seats, so there's plenty of room at Carmine's or Virgil's. But probably tonight I have about 30% of the reservations are birthdays. So you're going to hear a lot of happy birthdays tonight.
Wow. So talk to me about COVID protocols, though, which you have to be dealing with. Their city stipulated. Tell me about what a diner needs to do before they walk into one of your restaurants.
What a diner needs to do is to be happy. Times Square, Carmine's Road is probably some of the safest places in the country to eat right now. New York State has the highest vaccination rate. New York City has a high vaccination rate. If you're coming to Carmine's or Virgil's, all our employees are vaccinated, and so will you. So when you come in, we'll ask you to see your vaccination card and your ID, and then you'll come inside and you'll experience the world at Carmine's just like it was before COVID. You'll be able to sit down and comfortably eat and enjoy Carmine's in a safe atmosphere, knowing everyone there has been vaccinated. And in New York City, everyone has been vaccinated. This is the safest place you could eat in the country right now.
Now, you have restaurants, though. Your restaurant group has restaurants in other major cities, including Las Vegas, Washington, D.C. Give me a feel for what demand is like in those places.
So it's been an up and down roller coaster, I'm sure, like everyone notices. Carmine's in Las Vegas, Virgil's in Las Vegas has been phenomenal. Everyone has been going out to Vegas for their three-day trip to have fun, to get away from their tough life that we've all been going through. So Carmine's in the Forum Shops at Caesars, Virgil's at the Link Promenade have been incredible. Carmine's in D.C. has been doing great. Lots of business, even though the government's really not open, but the Smithsonian's are. Mm-hmm. So the Carmine's has been great. Carmine's in Atlantic City at the Tropicana, off the charts, packed, thank God. Atlantic City, Las Vegas, higher numbers than before COVID. On the Upper West Side, we never closed. We were just doing takeout during COVID in the beginning, and now we're at full dining, and it's another safe place because you're vaccinated. Those sales have been fantastic, too. So as a company, we're very happy because I think what happens with Carmine's is it's a good value. You're at a scratch kitchen. You're getting quality food. You're getting a fun, exciting atmosphere.
Yep.
And people just happy to get their lives back.
Yeah, and it's that family style. I've eaten there plenty of times. So talk to me about worker shortages, because we keep hearing from the restaurant industry that it's really hard to find workers in the kitchen, out in front of the house. What has it been like for you and your restaurant group?
It's, again, same thing, been up and down. The extended benefits just ended last week, so the phone's been ringing a little more about people who now want to come back to work, so it's getting a little easier for sure. The government needs to step up and replenish the restaurant recovery fund. They put out a fund there, 300,000 restaurants applied for relief, only 100,000 got funded. 200,000 restaurants are waiting for their relief from Congress. It's needed. Restaurants stepped up and did their part during the pandemic. People were allowed to stay home and quarantine and be safe. And restaurant workers went out there and, cooked every day to provide for people who stayed at home. And now the government needs to step in right now. I know Chuck Schumer's been working on this and needs to fund the Restaurant Recovery Fund. It's ridiculous that people should have to beg. It's like going through open heart surgery. And it's a good surgery, and then the next day everyone thinking you're fine. You're not. It's a slow recovery.
Right.
Restaurants are busy at dinner time. Of course they are. People are dining out. But a whole day, we need to make back 18 months up during this pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Congress has to step in.
Did A La Carte Group get some of that money from the government?
Some of our stores did, and some of our stores didn't. And it's very unfortunate. It was a randomness, and it was not. It wasn't even needs-based. It was just, it needs, really needs to be stepped up. People need relief, and they need help.
Talk to me also about this double whammy the restaurant industry is going through, not only the pandemic, but you have higher prices to contend with, supply chain issues. How are those higher prices impacting you? Have you had to raise menu prices?
We haven't raised our prices. We're kind of fortunate that pasta is a staple item when you eat at Carmine's, and that hasn't really gone up. Mm-hmm. So we've been able to offset our pricing with some labor savings, unfortunately, because we have tighter controls. Not everyone came back to work, so our labor has gone down a little. Some of our landlords have worked with us, and we've had, you know, fair rents during this pandemic. But we haven't raised prices. It's a challenge. You have to stay ahead. Maybe we're a little fortunate because we're a big group, so we have a little buying power. It's very tough. That's why I keep going back to this restaurant recovery fund. Independent restaurants don't stand a chance without government's help. We're not through this pandemic yet, and they need relief.
Tell me what you are most looking forward to tonight when the curtain goes up, not only at the Broadway Theater, but for your restaurant, Carmine's.
What am I looking forward to? 200 of my employees get their jobs back. They've been waiting a long time to work. I'm so happy for them. We're getting people back to work. That's what restaurants do. And we're going to allow people to celebrate at Carmine's all year. They haven't had a chance to celebrate in a safe environment. It's going to be great.
Like you said, 30 birthdays. That's a lot of birthdays. All right, Jeffrey Banks, CEO of A La Carte Group. Thanks so much. Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
And to your team there. All
Thanks.
Right. And still ahead, it is one of the most anticipated plays of the year. I'm going to talk to the producer of Thoughts of a Colored Man right after the break. Welcome back to this special edition of Yahoo Finance Live. I am here in New York City's Times Square for the reopening of Broadway tonight. And seven new plays are opening this fall, all by Black writers, including the highly anticipated Thoughts of a Colored Man, which begins previews, by the way, October 1st. I'm delighted to be joined by one of the play's producers, Brian Moreland. Brian, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
On this hot, beautiful day in Times Square. So talk to me about the premise of the play. Mm-hmm. I know it takes place in one day in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. and how these seven Black men sort of interact on that one day. Without giving too much away, tell us a little bit more about the play and why you felt passionate about bringing it to the stage.
Oh, absolutely. So Kenan Scott II sent me this play about 6 years ago while I was living in London. I read it and had never read anything like this before. A play about seven Black men growing up and living in Brooklyn, set over 24 hours, discussing their greatest joys and their greatest fears. There's a whole lot of laughter, all based in slam poetry and music intertwined to tell this story of Thoughts of a Colored Man. A live Black and thriving in the 21st century.
Talk about what it's been like to stage a play during the pandemic and the challenges, including the cost of having to do that, because I know that it also adds to the overall cost.
Absolutely. You know, COVID is not a cheap pandemic. Let's say that much. It is not a cheap pandemic. But I will say that it's been very, very fortunate. It has been challenging. I mean, we test twice a week. We are always in our masks. And I have to say that it's been rewarding because we know at least we are all safe. We're asking the same thing of our audiences as they come back to Broadway to do the exact same thing, to be vaccinated and or present a negative test at the door and wear your mask through the performance.
What have pre-ticket sales been like? How are things looking?
They are looking great. Broadway is 100% back. Our box office is booming. I am thrilled to say that. Come down to the Golden Theater and see Thoughts of a Colored Man. It is wonderful.
Talk to me about diversity on Broadway. Yeah. It's still a work in progress. Mm-hmm. Do you think that both on the stage and behind the scenes, it's starting to look more like the country, not just in terms of casting, but in terms of the stories that are being told?
Absolutely. 100% is changing. I'm really thrilled to say I'm also a member of the Board of Governors for the Broadway League. We just recently hired Janine Scott, who is our Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Officer, who is bringing diversity all through Broadway, communicating with all of the shows. On stage and off stage, the shows are changing their teams and their team members. It's really, really thrilling. I looked most recently at the announcement for Chicago, and I see that they have Bianca Medakin, Ana Villafante, Paulo Schott, and Lilias White. It's amazing to have that much diversity sitting in one show.
Let's talk about diversity in the audience, because the people who buy Broadway tickets are overwhelmingly white. Yep. The last figure I saw, less than 4% of those who buy Broadway tickets are people of color. Mm-hmm. How are you working to change that dynamic?
That's an excellent question. One of the initiatives through the audience development side of the Broadway League is a program called Black to Broadway, which is a program designed to engage with the black community to make sure that the theater remains open and accessible for all people to come. And one of the things that we're doing with Black to Broadway is coming up this actual weekend with the Playbill's Curtain Up event. We're having a whole panel with the black playwrights to discuss this diversity initiative. We have ticket prices that are geared primarily to people of color to really make sure that it's accessible and people can buy those tickets at whatever price point is good for their household.
When it comes to investing in Broadway, it's not for the faint of heart, but how much of the money coming into Broadway is diverse money, meaning it is coming from a diverse pool of people?
I like that question. I can't speak for all shows, but I can say this. Thoughts of a Colored Man has the most diverse investor pool ever. Sheila Johnson, co-founder of BET and the Salamander Resort, is one of our primary investors in Thoughts of a Colored Man, along with a lot of other diverse money. New money is sitting inside Thoughts of a Colored Man, and I think it's going to be a trend to open the doors so that all colors are represented on Broadway.
Now, you're one of six African-American producers on Broadway right now. That was my last count. Why do you think that is, and how do you start to up that number?
This, exactly what we're doing right now, communicating, right? Being one of six black lead producers for Broadway, it's an honor. It's an honor and also daunting, right? It's a daunting task. I think that what happens is that we don't think about a lot of careers that are available to all of us. And I think that producing is one of those careers that people don't think immediately, hey, I'd like to be a producer for Broadway. So we move forward.
Just before the pandemic, I know you were working on a show called Blue, and you were trying to find it a home here on Broadway. When that didn't work out, you were going to take it to the Apollo and bring Broadway up to Harlem. Tell us, because you had big names there, Leslie Uggams, Felicia Rashad involved in the show. What's happening with that show? What's the status?
Excellent question. We are just looking at the calendar right now. That's all. Coming out of the pandemic, being closed for 18 months, the Apollo Theater itself is getting ready to undergo some renovations. You may have read that our wonderful director, Felicia Rashad, just became the department head at Howard University. And so it's a wonderful time, but it's a lot of calendar scheduling. So we're going to do a deep dive into the calendar and figure out when we can do it. But it is still on track.
That's really exciting, and I look forward to seeing Blue.
Thank you.
What are you most excited about now that Broadway, the curtain's going back up?
This. Look around. Times Square. I'm excited that we're going to walk down the streets and these are going to be filled again with people. Yeah. I'm excited that the audiences are flocking back. Our box offices are booming. We are wearing our masks and doing it safely. I'm excited to sit in the theater again and just experience the stories that people have written and poured their hearts, souls, and talents into. Very excited.
Of course, we don't want to say it out loud, but I'm going to. The possibility that there might have to be a partial shutdown, mm-hmm. a full shutdown. Is there a contingency plan in place when you think about your shows and coming back to Broadway?
You know what's interesting? People have asked me that question. They always say, you know, are you being cautiously optimistic? No, I'm 100% optimistic. I'm optimistic because Broadway waited a very, very long time. We waited a long time because of the science, because of the vaccines, to make sure that when we opened our doors, that we could do it safely. And I have to say, to this date, as we speak right now, we haven't had a single positive test case or breakthrough case for our audience members just yet that we can pinpoint just so. So it's a good thing that we're doing it safely.
Absolutely. And have you found any pushback from the theater community in terms of sticking to these COVID protocols?
No.
People want to get back to work.
People want to get back to work, and we know that we're doing it for your safety and for mine.
And is there any particular show, of course, outside of your own, that you're excited to see this season?
You know what? I am. I have to be really honest. I'm a huge Lion King fan. I will be there this evening watching Disney's Lion King to see Circle of Life and see that Pride Rock go around again. So I'm going to be a little child tonight on the inside sitting at the Minskoff Theater.
Oh, have fun. What a classic.
Yeah.
I wish I was going with you. All right, Brian Moreland, Thoughts of a Colored Man. Again, it opens in previews October 1st, opens for real on Halloween.
On Halloween.
October 31st. Thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. Coming up next, more on the long-awaited return of Broadway.
All right, welcome back to Yahoo Finance Live. I'm Jared Blickrey, and I have a special guest. We got two things going on here. We have Broadway, and we have Alexis Christophorus over there. We also have the Big Apple reveal. And for that, we're going to bring in Jim Kelleher, CFA Director of Research and Senior Technology Analyst. Jim, thanks for joining us here today. I want to start with the watch, and I'm going to pull up a tweet on the Wi-Fi Interactive. I have a bunch of these, but this just kind of highlights some of the features that we're looking at here. Apple iWatch 7, 20% more screen area. Looks like the bezel is a little bit different. It's a little bit brighter. What stands out to you in this latest Apple Watch series?
Well, hello, Jared, and thanks for having us on. So I would say one thing that stands out is the larger display, of course. You know, that's a focus at Apple to make better use of available screen, make better use of the screen in terms of the physical form. And the fact that the screen is 20% larger, it's a little more user-friendly looking, and that the watch is a little more rounded, a little more ergonomic. I'd also say the fact that it has a brighter, it has brightness when it's down from your arm, so you can discreetly glance at the time, as people tend to do, not so discreetly. So that's a human interest feature. They've also done, you know, some sensor work. There's a feature when you're cycling, it determines if you and your bike have fallen, that sort of thing. So I think there's a realization that the user base of watch owners are aging, and so there's a concern with health that takes things realistically.
Well, I want to delve into that a little bit more. There's been talk that they're going to add sensors, more sensors to the Apple Watch over time. Any hints as to what they might be? Did we learn anything from this event? And if not, can you just rehash them?
Well, again, it's going on, and I've had to veer away from it to do this interview. But, you know, I think generally when Watch first came out, it was a recognition that the average user was, you know, almost a marathoner. And over time, I think the focus on watch, at Apple itself, has moved from athletics to health. And so, you know, already they have the heart monitors and EKG sensors and things like that. So generally, I'd say the next thing we could see in watch and in iPhone would be connectivity, maybe even to health professionals. So there'd be that level of connectivity, which is something that 5G promises, a level of connectivity that certainly supersedes the mobile device and goes into the Internet of Things, goes to everyday life.
Well, I want to move on then. We got some new information about the latest iPad and iPad Mini, and the iPad Mini getting finally a USB-C port, also 5G. What did we learn there?
Well, I think some of what we're seeing with iPad Mini, you know, will give us an idea of what's coming with the iPhones in a little bit. Enhanced cameras on front and back, center stage, which allows you to keep a subject in the center of your screen, even as the photographer is moving about. Certainly the improved neural capabilities of the A13 Bionic chip for improvements in natural learning, which is going to help with speech recognition, and they're talking about the Translate app to translate a conversation in real time. I think what you're seeing with iPad, what you're going to see with iPhone, is not an enormous change in the physical infrastructure of the phone, but just enhancements kind of across the board, particularly in terms of cameras and video.
Well, I want to move on now to the iPhone itself, kind of the big lead up here to the event. And just looking at some of the features that were expected, we got some expectations about new camera features, updated screens, faster processor. What can you tell us about what we should expect here?
I think the expectation is that and we don't even know if it's going to be called the iPhone 13. They could go back to the S designation they use with iPhones 4 through 8, in the sense that the physical package may not look a great deal different, but there's an indication it may be a little heavier because there's an expectation there will be it's going to pack 1 terabyte of storage, and it's going to have a stronger, longer lasting battery. So it may weigh a touch more, but probably look pretty much the same. But again, every part of the device is going to have a little bit of an upgrade, and Apple is going to tout those upgrades, particularly in terms of camera performance and the ultra wide performance. You know, maybe we'll get this ProMotion feature in the video, and maybe better video management, more intuitive video management capabilities. So you make it easier to make and edit a movie. I think the storage is going to be very important, because with the more and more, you know, with 5G comes ever more data hungry devices. Ever more data hungry apps. And so you're therefore going to need this extra storage on the device. And not everybody's going to need it, but it'll be available for you if you do need it.
Well, I'd be remiss here if we didn't touch on the iMac. Any feature enhancements that we're expecting for this line of products, Jim?
iMac has had, some of its, I think just generally you're going to see iMac move closer and closer to interaction, I should say, with iOS, so that the Mac one day will be more like accessing apps on the iMac will be more intuitive and more like accessing apps on the iPad or the iPhone. There are still a few iMac families. I think one of the iMac Pros is still, most recently, still had an Intel chip, and I think they'll announce that every Mac now has has an Apple chip in it as a processor. But that may or may not occur today. Again, it's been a pretty action-packed event so far. We haven't seen anything on the new AirPods, and we haven't seen anything on the new iPhones yet. So it's been a lot today.
Yeah, and we're going to stick right here with this. Jim Kelleher, we want to thank you for joining us here, CFA Director of Research and Senior Technology Analyst. And stick with us as we bring you more coverage of Apple's big event. But just ahead, as Broadway turns the lights back on, what's being done to keep performers safe? We'll be right back.
COVID protocols, of course, makes it different because I want to just touch and hug my brothers and, the people we haven't seen for a year and a half. But, we still got to remember that we're still in the pandemic and we still got to remain safe. And so they've been doing their best to, keep us safe, keep making sure that we're following protocols. There's a lot of hand sanitizers. My hand is dry, so I keep a lot of lotion, too.
And that was Juwam M. Jackson, one of the stars of Ain't Too Proud, The Life and Times of the Temptations, which, by the way, returns to Broadway next month. Bringing these performers back and doing it safely has, of course, been a massive undertaking. And one of the key players is the Actors Equity Association, the national union of more than 51,000 stage managers and actors who work in live theater. Joining me now remotely is the president of the Actors Equity, Kate Schindel. Kate, good to see you again. Hi. This is a big day for you and for your members. I know that some of your members have already gone back to work outside of Broadway. What are you hearing from them?
Mostly excitement. I mean, we represent actors and stage managers all across the country. And so while there is some trepidation, and I think as was just mentioned, a need to continue to be aware that we're still living with COVID, and we're probably going to be living with COVID in some form or other for a while. People are just overwhelmingly looking forward to getting back to work and to doing what we do. It's been a while since people were able to do this.
Yeah, it's been 18 months, longest shutdown in Broadway's history. So talk to me about these COVID protocols, which are stringent, as they should be for live theater. Are you getting any pushback from members, or what has the vaccination rate been like among your members there?
You know, I have a friend who runs a regional theater and did an informal anonymous survey of all the people who were coming to work at the theater, planning to come and work at the theater a few months ago. And he said to me, you know, we asked them, are you vaccinated already? Are you planning to get vaccinated as soon as you can? Are you on the fence, or are you not planning to get vaccinated? And he said 98% of the people who he surveyed said that they were either vaccinated or getting vaccinated as soon as possible. So I can't say that every single person out of the 51 to 52,000 members we have is in favor of vaccinations, but the anecdotal and conversational assessment that I can give you is that people are overwhelmingly willing to be vaccinated.
That is wonderful, wonderful news, and I know they are eager to get back to work. When you look at the theater industry pre-pandemic, employment in the entertainment industry was near a record high. Do you think that you'll be able to return to those pre-pandemic levels, or, like, say, the restaurant industry, have some people just left the industry altogether?
I should say with relative certainty that some folks have probably left the industry altogether. At the same time, I think that theater will survive. I do believe that we will get back to strong, healthy employment numbers. It's just a really challenging industry because not only is there very little ability to do things like social distancing on stage, but also, you know, you have to take the entire company on stage, backstage, front of house, and then add in another, you know, 500, 1,000, 1,500 people or more to be accommodated by that building's ventilation system. So it's been a very difficult needle to thread and frustrating for a lot of us. But I do believe that the future of theater looks good. And because live performance is such an economic engine in communities all over the country, theater coming back and other live events coming back will help those restaurants and hotels and, you know, the businesses that surround the theater to recover more fully as well.
Right. I know that during the shutdown, some actors and those in the theater lost their benefits. Can you tell me how the theater community came together to make sure most people didn't have their benefits expire?
Well, we have a work week-based system. So if people aren't working, it becomes difficult to qualify for health insurance. Some of the plans introduced new levels of service, including the one that Equity members accumulate weeks toward. But we also have an incredible organization called the Actors Fund, which is a not-for-profit for everybody in the entertainment industry. And they have a health insurance resource center. So if someone did happen to fall off their benefits, the Actors Fund can guide them through what can be a very challenging health insurance marketplace. That, for example, that's how I got my health insurance. And so in addition to providing things like emergency financial assistance and, you know, job training programs and financial management, the Actors Fund Health Resource Center is something that a lot of our members have used.
Well, look, it's great news that you're all getting back to work. Long time in coming. Kate Schindel, president of Actors Equity, thanks so much for being with us today. And we're going to step away from Times Square right now because Jared Blickery has the latest on that Apple event taking place right now. They just unveiled the iPhone 13. Jared, tell us all about it.
That's right. We got five colors here. And let's go to the Wi-Fi Interactive where I have plucked some tweets from the Twitterverse here. And we can see what these colors are. We got pink, blue, midnight, starlight, and product red. And some new features here. We got a new rear camera layout, tougher glass on the front screen, and a 20% smaller notch. You can see this diamond formation. They are diagonal now. Also checking out some of the other features, they have a ceramic shield to protect it from drops and scratches, IP68 water resistance, that smaller display notch that we've been talking about, and of course the diagonal cameras. And then we have a 28% brighter Super Retina XDR display with max 1200 nits, a nit being a unit of brightness there. You can see all those bright colors on your screen. And also, the Bionic chipset, the A15 Bionic chipset, 5-nanometer process, 6-core CPU with 2 high-performance and 4 efficiency cores, 50% faster than the leading competition, so they say. And that's all we got right now. I just want to check in on a chart of Apple stock. You can see it's been drifting down, actually, throughout the announcement, a little bit off the lows here, but maybe a little bit inauspicious. Nevertheless, we're going to keep rolling with details, Alexis, as they come to us.
To this special edition of Yahoo Finance Live here in Times Square to celebrate the reopening of Broadway after an 18-month closure because of the pandemic. So tomorrow marks the start of Hispanic Heritage Month, and in honor of that, we are joined by Luis Salgado. He is director and choreographer of Viva Broadway, When We See Ourselves. This is an annual event celebrating Broadway and the Latinx community. It's going to take place just to my left here this weekend, and we are delighted to have you here, Luis.
Hola. Thank you so much for having me.
Talk to me about Viva for those who are not familiar with the show.
Well, Viva Broadway, to begin with, we did it last year virtually, directed by my mentor, Sergio Trujillo. Okay. And it was a hard work, you know, because everybody was at their homes. We wanted to be together, all this energy we wanted to share with people. And now we get an opportunity to come right here at Duffy Square, here in Times Square, and do it on Saturday 18th at 5 p.m. And people can just come for free.
It's for
free. Enjoy the talent of our Latino community.
And then let's talk about that community, because not a lot of them are in the audience coming to see shows. We took a look at the numbers, and of the nearly 15 million tickets sold pre-pandemic, just about a million of them were bought by the Latinx community. What can we do to bring live theater to that community and get them in the seats here on Broadway?
Well, step one is make them feel welcome. You know, like shows like In the Heights and On Your Feet. Talk to that community very specifically and inspire us to see ourselves on those stages, which is why our show is called Viva Broadway, When We See Ourselves. Mm-hmm. When we see ourselves, there's a chain reaction of inspiration and empowerment and validation and belonging that then allows us to go and see Wicked and see Lion King and see ourselves in those stories. But we need an invitation that is a little bit more direct, right? That is, and that's the beauty about Viva Broadway, that Broadway League has made this movement to really talk directly to the Latino audience to say, come join us on this Broadway adventure.
And as part of that, I would think, having investors be diverse and investors of Latinx backgrounds to bring those stories. Are you seeing more of that, Luis?
1,000%. You know, of course, I am all about inclusion and not segregation. So I'm not saying that I don't want to work for a producer that has the really good mean to produce a show that I have. But if we have our diverse producers mm-hmm. who understands the stories that we want to tell, who are willing to put that economic value in the true voice we want to share, it would be impactful and it would make a difference. And also there would be a different know-how. Something that happens in the PR, you know, relationships is that we get a press release or that goes into the American market, which is great. But that doesn't mean those are the newspapers that we're reading. And then if we get one for the Latino community, maybe it's watered down. So we need to make this hybrid even in the way we communicate to the news or the reporters about what's happening. The same happens with producers. The same happens with writers. And of course, the same happens with music directors and directors themselves.
Absolutely. Well, you're starting the conversation for sure. The concert is Viva, How We See Ourselves, right here in Times Square. Luis Salgado, best of luck to you.
Thank you so much. An honor to be here. And don't miss it. Saturday, 18, 5 p.m., Viva Broadway, When We See Ourselves.
If you're in the city, make it happen. All right. Thanks, Luis.
Thank you.
Coming up next, much more from that Apple event. That's the other big news of the day. They unveiled that new iPhone. We're going to have all the details for you right after this. Welcome back to this special edition of Yahoo Finance Live here in Times Square. In this next hour, you're going to hear from some of the people getting Broadway back to business, including a public health expert who has been weighing in on COVID protocols. But first, lots of news coming out of Apple today with their big event. Jared Blickery has been watching it all go down. He is here now with the details on the iPhone 13 and more. Jared.
That's right. They're talking about the iPhone Pro right now. But I want to go over some of the tweets I've been looking at. I got some great pictures and video, particularly of that camera, which now is positioned in diagonal mode. So the cinematic mode is really pretty compelling here. Here's a tweet. It anticipates when a subject is about to enter the frame, changes focus when a subject turns away from the camera, and you can tap to easily shift the focus. And I have an actual video here. You can see, oh, you might remember this this particular scene or these characters here. Pretty interesting how it goes back and forth, something that professional cameras are able to do as well. But I do want to go over some of the other features. This is the A15 Bionic chipset, much, much faster, 5-nanometer process, 6-core CPUs with 2 high performance and 4 efficiency cores. And it's 50% faster than what they call the leading competition. And there you go, that's a phone right there. It's going to be available in 5 colors: pink, blue, midnight, starlight, and product red. And we got to get to the, let's see, I think we have the watch here. No, that's still the phone. Same design for iPhone 13 and iPhone 13 mini. It's a 28% brighter Super Retina XDR display with max 1200 nits. There we go. I got a little bit lost in my own presentation. And here's another set of features: ceramic shield to protect from drops and scratches, IP68 water resistant, smaller display notch, cameras, of course, diagonal now. I do want to take a look at the watch now. This is the Series 7. This starts at $399. Also taking a look at some of the other models, they go all the way down to $199. The bezel is a little bit less noticeable, so you have a little bit more screen space. I think it's 4 or 5 millimeters. And there we go. Here's a summary of some of the features. 20% more screen area than the Series 6. Rounded edges still, but smaller 1.7 millimeter edge bezels. Up to 70% brighter, full keyboard, tap and drag, IP6 times dust resistance, WR50 water resistance. Got to get Dan Howley back in here to explain some of these terms to me. Same 18-hour battery, but 33% faster charging. So 45 minutes, that will give you 80%, again, starting at $399. And I think we're going to move on to another one of their products. There's the iPad mini. Here we go. 5G, USB-C, that was a feature that a lot of people were asking about in the mini iPad there. Finally got that USB-C port. And let's take a look at some of the other features here. The new basic iPad has a 20% faster processor, better wide-angle front camera that can recenter you around during video calls. That's called center stage. Double the storage, still there's a button, a fingerprint reader, and giant bezels on the top and bottom, and it is still $329. I'm going to send it back to you, Alexis. I know you have a lot more over in Times Square.
Okay. All right, thanks so much, Jared. Lots of news there coming out of the Apple event today. Well, here on Broadway, the show, of course, cannot go on without some stringent COVID protocols, vaccine requirements for the audience, for performers, for behind the stage as well. Jack Karavanos is a clinical professor at NYU School of Global Public Health, and you've actually advised Broadway on those COVID protocols as they reopen up. Thanks so much for being with us, Professor.
Well, happy to be here.
Talk to us a little bit about how returning to the theater is going to look and feel different now versus pre-pandemic.
Yes, and there will be some things that you'll immediately recognize. You'll see, of course, people wearing masks. They will probably unlikely be handing out anything physically, so everything you do, you'll take out of a box. Unlikely to see any concessions open, because right now we don't want people taking off their masks and handling anything. And, of course, you can't eat and drink and wear a mask. So some things will be very obvious. Other things are going to be a little not so obvious and are behind the scenes. The biggest change is going to be more air coming into the buildings and better air. So quantity and quality of the air coming in. And there are filters that have been installed in almost all the theaters that can capture viral particles. So we'll see some ventilation changes there.
That's great to hear, because I know so many of our historic theaters here, it's going to be hard to retrofit them because they are so old. Yeah. How have they been able to do that?
Well, yes. In my work with the Broadway League and going to all these theaters, each one is unique. They're historic. You can't change them very often. On the positive side, theaters tend to be large spaces, so there's a lot of dilution. It's not like a small office where it's, you know, everybody's in one
it's
place, like a restaurant. Yeah,
right, right.
So that's really good. There are different protocols for the orchestra versus the dressing areas versus the front of the house. Mm-hmm. So each one had to tailor the protocols into its own structure.
One thing people are going to see right away is there's no intermission anymore, right? You talked about no concessions, and there's no intermission for these shows.
Yes, it's going to be tough. And there's the good and bad there, of course, is people won't be mingling and won't be tempted to take off their masks. People will not be using the restrooms, which is always a challenge in Broadway theaters, lining up for the restrooms. But it will be a learning experience. I think they're going to have to experience this for a couple of months and see where to tweak it.
So a huge tip for theater goers, make sure you use the lavatory before you go in the theater because there's
Absolutely.
No intermission. Another thing that's different, and I always loved this, and especially when I would take my kids when they were younger to Broadway, is after the show, hanging out by the stage door and getting your playbill autographed by the actors. That's not happening now.
No, that's not going to happen. And really, after theater parties and backstage, I've been invited to the opening tonight of Lion King. So I was hoping maybe I could go backstage, but I was told don't even think about it.
Right.
So I think that will come with time. As the vaccination rates in New York are getting better and better, they're well over 80%. So I think that'll slowly get there, hopefully by the spring.
Hopefully. And you're talking, we're ticking through a lot of the ways Broadway, the Broadway experience has changed because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
But when you look out to when we are finally on the other side of all of this, do you think there are some lasting changes that will be implemented here on Broadway post-pandemic?
I think so. I think all of a sudden infectious disease has got a whole new following, whether it's the flu or whether it's other diseases. So I think you'll see more and more of the unions that sort of demanding vaccinations and healthcare and monitoring, and also periodic testing. I think COVID is going to be with us forever. It's going to be a routine a flu-like disease. And I think there'll be testing, routine, maybe random testing for the next several years.
Now, you've been working with the Broadway League, as you said, on these COVID protocols. Talk to me a little bit about the cost. I don't know how much you can speak to this, but it definitely adds to the overall producer's cost to have to invest in these COVID protocols so they can reopen.
Yes, absolutely. The cost to run a show and the profit margins are very thin. So installing even MERV 13 filters, improved fans, and upgrading is very, very cost prohibitive also. So it's going to be a challenge, but luckily there's been some financial support by the state and the federal government to help us through this period of transition.
Are there plans for contingency plans for if we don't even want to say it, but if there were to be a partial shutdown or worst case, another full shutdown of Broadway?
Yes, everybody, all the epidemiologists and my colleagues are concerned about we're entering flu season. Are we going to see a third wave of COVID come and what's a contingency? But I don't think we'll quite react the same way. And we see it even now when the numbers started going up over the summer, many of the protocols weren't, we didn't go back to the original protocols. They weren't relaxed. So I think there'll be a bit more cautious approach to going back to those.
What are you most excited about as a theater lover yourself now that these theaters are going to open their doors again for the first time in 18 months?
Yeah. Well, I'm a New Yorker, born and raised. I love Times Square. And even being here around you and seeing all this, it's so wonderful to see the excitement of the city come back. I never appreciated how important tourists were to the city and the vibrancy of Times Square. So just walking around and seeing everybody coming back and feeling a little bit more at ease.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be exciting. I'm also waiting for Off-Broadway to open up and some of the smaller venues. So it's it'll be a lot of fun.
You bring up a great point because oftentimes the resources off-Broadway are not like the resources on Broadway.
Yeah.
What has the reopening of theaters away from these streets here on Broadway been like?
Yes, that is it's a challenging effort. To what extent do you follow those protocols? That's why the state hasn't really mandated changes in ventilation or strict protocols. They're letting each theater sort of design what's best for them and their audience. So I think it's a wait and see on that. But I'm a little worried about those because those small theaters downtown are operating on a very thin margin. So they can't be asked to do too much.
What, because you've worked so closely with the Broadway theaters in reopening safely, what has been, I guess, the biggest obstacle for them or the biggest challenge for them to open their doors again?
Well, Broadway's complicated and the theaters are complicated. So when I first got involved, we have the front of the house, we have theater employees, then we have the house, the people, us, and then you have the actors' equity and the unions, and then you have the backstage. So it's a very complicated employment situation with all ones with different areas. So people said, is there one solution that could do all of these areas? And of course, the answer is no. So I was sort of taken aback at how we had to customize every single area and to really think, okay, what do dressing rooms need? What does the concession stand need? And sort of tailoring all that. But it is a complicated business. There's a lot of people there.
I started our special more than an hour ago by saying it was a Herculean effort. So I think it speaks to just how much everybody in this community wanted to come back to work, the fact that you were able to get so many people on the same page.
Yes, it's. I think there's a lot of excitement and momentum now. People are ready for it and no longer as fearful of the virus. The hospitalization rates and the treatments are so much better. So people are starting to be a little bit more open to moving about. So that's great.
Yeah, well, listen, enjoy The Lion King tonight.
Oh, I'm so excited. Yeah, it's going to be exciting.
Another guest we had is going to the show as well, so I'm officially jealous. Jack Caravanos, professor there at the NYU School of Global Public Health. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much
for the work you did here on Broadway.
Thank you.
Coming up next, more about the reopening of Broadway and also that Apple event. Don't forget that's going on. We're going to recap all the things they unveiled there after this break.
I'm the bass player at Hamilton.
Talk to me about the COVID protocols you as musicians have had to take.
Hamilton is taking COVID protocols really seriously. We all have to be vaccinated. Fortunately, none of us are playing wind instruments.
Okay.
So it's all strings or percussion.
So everybody can stay masked while playing the music.
Right.
What are you looking forward to the most when the curtain goes back up?
Feeling the anticipation, hearing those first few opening bars, it's pretty cool.
And that was Hamilton musician Richard Hammond, excited to be back at work and in the pit. Of course, music is a huge draw on Broadway, and I'm joined now by one of the people who does it best, Tony, Grammy, Emmy, and Pulitzer Prize-winning composer Tom Kitt. Tom, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Now, 2020 was supposed to be a huge year in your career. You had two shows that were going to open, Flying Over Sunset and The Visitor. Jagged Little Pill was already open, and then it all stopped in March of 2020. Bring us back to that time and what it was like for you.
It was quite traumatic. A lot of work, obviously, going into getting those shows right to the place where they were about to open. And also suddenly realizing the fear of how you've been moving around New York, you've been congregating with your fellow artists, family, friends, and the uncertainty about going home and quarantining, how you were going to be feeling. Were you sick? I have three children, my wife. Were we all okay? Were people I care about? It was just a very uncertain time, and a lot of things come at you at once. There's a feeling of loss. You're mourning what is not able to be, and then you're quite fearful and sad. And New York overnight turned into sort of an unrecognizable city. Lots of people left, people walking around in masks, and you have a fear of even leaving your apartment. So it's really hard to put into words, but it was very, very hard to get through.
Very different situation behind us now. I mean, I know this town was a ghost town. I'm a native New Yorker, and it was eerily quiet and deserted during the pandemic. But during that time of reflection, you actually came out with some music, and your new album is aptly named Reflect. Talk to me about that.
Well, one of the things that pulled me out of this initial state of not feeling like I wanted or could create something was this urgency suddenly to speak to this moment. And it was a conversation I had with my wife, Rita, saying, artists, the world needs artists now more than ever. We need to be speaking to this moment. And I had actually run into somebody or someone had recognized me in Central Park from Next to Normal and thanked me for that show and said it was really speaking to them in this moment. And that really made me feel like I had a responsibility to anyone that's going to find something to connect to in my work. So I embarked on creating a song cycle, which became an album, this album Reflect. Mm-hmm. But I also knew it had to be a collaboration because my experience is just one. I wanted to speak to so many of the different experiences that my fellow artists, my community was going through in this moment. And I'm very proud of the songs that I've co-written with my fellow artists about a number of important feelings, issues, thoughts that they wanted to express in this song that has become the album Reflect.
And you have some Broadway greats who you have teamed up with here. And did they write the lyrics and they're also performing the songs?
So I basically said to them, contribute anything in words, whether it's a poem, an essay, a monologue, just write down something you want to express, and then I'll go craft a song, present it to you, and if you feel good about it, we'll record it. And that's basically how it went. And everyone was always just, it was so wonderful to see the response when I presented them with the song. There are a couple of songs also that were written before this moment that I felt were really, really spoke to it that I wanted to include. And the other great thing is that my children, who have taught me so much in this moment, are all on the album.
I'm with you, right? Because they're so resilient. And they somehow always find the brighter side of things.
They had a great courage and resilience that I didn't have at first. Mm-hmm. And it was a moment where I realized I have to be dad again. I have to be part of this family unit.
And be present for them.
And bring strength. And that was a wonderful realization, but it really came from their strength.
How did you get this album even off the ground? Were you able to go into the studio? Did you all do it remotely? How did it go?
We did it in the studio, and I have to give major thanks and gratitude to Sony Masterworks, who made this album with me. From the beginning, my friend Scott Farthing said, we're going to do this in the studio. We're going to bring musicians and singers back. And I have to say, it was so emotional to see your friends and get back to this muscle memory of creating in the same space. And this was before vaccines. So really, the protocols were safe. We felt wonderful. The power station took great care of us, and we were able to make an album in the way that we all love making records.
So I guess you guys were tested regularly and lots of social distancing because these people were singing,
exactly,
which we know
right.
Was an even bigger threat during COVID.
Yes, social distancing, testing, and of course a constant maintenance to disinfect and make sure that if anyone is going into a booth, they're having new stuff to sing with. So just making sure everyone was safe. That was the most important thing.
So talk to me about the future. Here we are. We're reopening. What is the status of the shows that you were about to bring to the stage before the pandemic?
Well, I'm happy to say that I began rehearsal for The Visitor at the Public Theater. This is actually my my wristband to be able to get into rehearsal because we're all testing and, yeah. and we have apps that we just make sure that it's safe for us all to be at rehearsal. Jagged Little Pill is going to begin performances in October, but we have a number of things that we're already starting on. And Flying Over Sunset at Lincoln Center also will begin rehearsals in October and start previews in November. So I'm so grateful that these goalposts that have been moving around have firmly landed. And I can't tell you what it means to just be back on the train, going to rehearsal, being with my community, creating in the room. It's you realize what you've been missing.
You feel like yourself again, yes. a little bit, right? You know, and I can relate because we haven't been able to do this for a very long time, be out in the field and report. And it feels like, it feels good. You're yourself again.
Yes, it certainly feels that so many things, but there's just a gratitude and a sense of accomplishment at the end of your day that
right.
had been missing.
Yeah. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, you're nominated for a Tony for Jagged Little Pill.
Yes, correct.
Coming up, the Tonys are going to be held in person
yes.
September 26th, I think at the Winter Garden Theater.
Correct, yes.
We started this segment by saying you're a Tony, Grammy, Emmy, and Pulitzer Prize winning composer. Does it ever get old, Tom?
It never gets old. To be recognized by your peers, to be contributing to the world of theater in ways that have connected and moved people. I've had a number of shows, great. I'm very thankful on Broadway, some which have brought nominations, some which haven't. So you just realize when this light shines on you to really appreciate it, live in the moment, mm-hmm. And just celebrate everyone who's a part of this, whether you're nominated or not.
What would you tell young people coming up who want to get involved on the musical aspect of things? They want to compose or orchestrate for Broadway. If you could briefly just tell us what your path was, but what would your advice be to those people?
My advice would be to just bring your voice, your authentic voice, the things that you feel, the things you care about and you want to write about. Always bring that to what you're doing, no matter what the subject matter, no matter what the tone. Just spend this time learning, absorbing, and finding the artist that you want to be, and then do whatever you can to realize that voice and create something that is going to move and is going to be an important part of this world. And I would say to all those young artists, we need you now more than ever. Mm-hmm. We truly do. This has been a really difficult time. I've spoken to a lot of young artists, and I want to be as supportive as I can to anyone that is dreaming of this. We need you now more than ever.
Important message, and thank you for all the great work you do. Tom Kitt, we'll be watching the Tonys and pulling for you.
Thank you.
Jagged Little Pill, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And don't go anywhere when we come back. All the news coming out of that Apple Live streaming event, including the new iPhone, right after this.
Welcome back to Yahoo Finance Live. I'm Jared Blickrey. Well, the big Apple event just wrapped. And for that, we want to bring in Yahoo Finance's Dan Howley. I know that, Dan, you've been listening to the entire presentation here with bated breath. What did we learn about some of these new products?
Yeah, so we got some things we expected, some we didn't, and we just didn't see some that we were hoping for at all. So the main draw for the show, obviously, the iPhone 13, they announced that, as well as the iPhone 13 Pro. They're also going to have a Mini and a Pro Max. Pricing is going to start at $699 for the iPhone Mini, iPhone 13 Mini, and $999 for the iPhone Pro. Now, the big draw here for them is the new cameras. We're talking about an improved wide-angle lens on the iPhone 13. And then the Pro, that gets a whole new lineup of cameras, improved low light capabilities across the board, as well as improved video capabilities. And they both are going to offer something called cinematic mode, where you'll be able to automatically change the focal point of the lens when you walk into a frame or a subject walks into a frame. You can also do that by tapping the screen, or you can force it to hold the focus whenever you want. There's also obviously some improved processors here. We have the A15 Bionic chip that's coming to the new iPhone 13. And then generally speaking, they talked about how they're upping their game with the screen. You have a smaller notch at the top of the display. Some people dislike that the notch entirely is there, but I think a smaller version is fine. And then the iPhone Pros get a new true motion display. That means that the screen refresh rate can change between 10 times refresh per second up to 120 times to be refreshed per second. And that means that you'll get improved scrolling, improved gaming, improvements in other apps. That can also chew into battery life. So that's why they have it notch itself down to as low as 10 times per second when you're not scrolling. So really interesting improvements here. Then we have the Apple Watch Series 7. That's got a bigger display on both the base model and then the larger one. We're talking about 41 millimeters and 45 millimeters. And that isn't necessarily going to increase the size of the watch itself. That's because they managed to push out the bezels on the watch. That seems to be really the only major change to the Apple Watch Series 7. They obviously talked about getting improvements to Apple Fitness Plus. That goes along with the Apple Watch. And then some of the other fitness capabilities. Then we had new iPads. We have the new iPad Mini, which got a huge redesign, something that hadn't happened for quite a while. It's going to get an improved processor, improved graphics, and then a newer screen at 8.4 inches. Then we have a new iPad, the base iPad. That's going to get a new processor as well. And both of those will be getting Apple's Center Stage, which allows the camera to follow you when you're doing a FaceTime call or any call with participating third-party apps for that matter. So you can leave it sitting up and then have a FaceTime call and kind of move around your place rather than having to sit stationary. So a slew of upgrades here, not available though, or not on deck, were the new AirPods that we were expecting, or a new MacBook. So the AirPods we were expecting were supposed to be slotted in between the base AirPods and the AirPods Pro. Hopefully that comes sometime in the future though.
Yeah, I was a bit curious that we didn't get that update on the iPods, but thank you for that report, Yahoo Finance's Dan Howley. Well, we want to continue the discussion here of all things Apple with Santosh Rao. He's the head of research at Manhattan Venture Partners. Thanks for joining us here. You were just listening to Dan Howley. Lots of focus on the camera features of the new iPhone here, especially cinematic mode. Just some stunning images that we've been looking at. But what stood out to you in today's presentation?
Yeah, I think overall, like it was just mentioned, a lot of features. But as expected, I think everything was more evolutionary than revolutionary, and that has been said in the past. So, and that's expected in the second year of a design change. It's always more evolutionary. Next year, we'll get more design changes, more different form factors and all that. But this year was more feature updates and enhancements, which is what we got. Yes, more space, more storage, more display. I like the iWatch features especially because the battery drains very fast. It has a lot more features and wasn't upgraded since, I think, 2019, if I'm not mistaken. So that's a nice upgrade. So I think for picture aficionados, picture people who like cameras, it's great. But for the incremental buyer, I don't know if he's going to come in just because of this, just because of 5G. Yes, 5G is there, but I don't know if this is enough to pull him in. So people who are looking to upgrade, they might do it because it's almost the same price as iPhone 12. But for the new ones, the people who want to upgrade, I think they might wait for the next one because it's really not that much unless you're really into cameras and pictures.
Well, yeah, I was chatting with one of our producers during one of the breaks here. He's a sucker, as he says, for all those new cinematic features or phone features that come out with respect to the camera. I want to get to some of the other products we haven't necessarily discussed, some new improvements. I think you mentioned the iPad, maybe the iPad mini. Anything else that catches your attention here today?
Yeah, I think that's good. iPad is very popular. It became more popular during the pandemic, stay at home and all that. So I think that was a good enhancement. It will improve sales there as well. So I think things will grow and it's net positive, but it's not anything that's really out of the expectations. It was in line. People expected all these things. So nothing really. I thought the presentation was kind of low key. Yes, I mean, their low-key is always very grand anyway, but relatively speaking, it wasn't that spectacular as I expected. And so we'll see. I think, including the iPod, I didn't see any, well, they didn't introduce anything yet. I thought they'll have something there as well. So a few things, few misses, few pluses, few minuses, net-net. I think it's going to stay the same as expected, more evolutionary than revolutionary, and it's not going to move the needle as much in terms of the stock.
Well, I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about the Apple supply chain. We know that a lot of chip manufacturers around the world have had to deal with shortages, not only in terms of the incoming materials, but also in shipping their products. I know we're not going to get that's not what this presentation is about, but separately, what's the state with Apple and its products? I noticed that the Pro 13 goes on sale, not this Friday, but a week from next Friday. Are they going to be able to fulfill their orders?
Yeah, I think that's a big issue. We'll see. We'll wait and see. But so far, it looks like they can. I thought they might raise the prices for iPhone 13 because of the supply chain constraints and all the bottlenecks and all that, but they kept the prices at the same level, so that's good. I think as far as I'm concerned, as far as I see, talking to a few people in the industry as well, looks like that should be on time. So we'll see. We'll wait and see how that goes. The bottlenecks are a big issue.
Well, then just on the price points, I'm looking at our banner here. It says Pro Max starting at $1,099. We know that goes, that's just the base model. I think 128 gigabytes goes up to a terabyte. Does Apple, do you think, do they still have the pricing power to pump out these new models, admittedly in this interim cycle, and still charge as much as they are?
Yeah, it looks like they have the pricing power. They've had it for a while. And that's one thing that's good with Apple. They do it very well. They have the pricing power, the features and all that. So I think they can pretty much hold those prices, raise the prices if needed, raise it more. But Apple can command good pricing. They always had the advantage there. So I don't see any issue in terms of people rejecting that because of the price, because it's just become so intrinsic part of our lives that you just need it. You just need it. It is a have to, not maybe if needed, but it's a must part of our lives.
I know exactly what you're talking about, because when I need a new phone, I need it yesterday. It's gotten so slow, I can't stand it, or I need the new camera feature. I just want to broaden the discussion out to some of the other cell phone manufacturers. Apple is perennially the leader in this group, but I'm just wondering, any contenders now that you see catching up to it? Google Pixel has their own phone. The Samsung Galaxy is ever present. Anything on the competition front?
Yeah. All those companies have been nipping at their heels for a long time. Apple can hold its own. But the Android features are pretty strong. It's a strong competition. But that's the beauty of Apple. Once you come into their ecosystem, it's so tough to get out of it. So, and that's been their strong point all along. So I don't see anything that'll really change that scenario. But Google and Samsung, they've always been nipping at their heels, and Apple has maintained their market share all along. So maybe they'll lose a point here and there, but I think overall, it's essentially a market leader in what they do.
All right, we want to thank you for stopping by here. Santosh Rao, head of research at Manhattan Venture Partners. You bet. All right, we want to get a quick check into the market here, and for that, we're going to go to the Wi-Fi Interactive. We're seeing today a lot of movement in the bond market. 10-year yield down 4 basis points, and guess what that means? We got healthcare and tech in the lead. Interesting leadership scenario here. Well, this board, I can promise you, was very much green on the open, looking a little bit different right now. We can see some of the standouts. Comcast down 6.5%. They did update their forecast for subscribers, disappointed the street. Charter Communications also down 4%. But we're seeing a lot of positive momentum in some of the semiconductor names. You're going to see some red here, but the SOX, the Philly Chip Index, is at a record high. You can see AMD's up 1%, clawing back some of yesterday's losses. NVIDIA up 42 basis points, as you can see on your screen. And then just a quick look at the sector action. There we go. Healthcare and tech in the lead. Financials and energy, those are the biggest downside losers here. And guess what? We're going to have more with Alexis on Broadway right after this.
Welcome back to our special live coverage of Yahoo Finance. Broadway is back. Certainly Broadway takes an army of people to get back up and running, including those responsible for designing and stitching those incredible costumes. Brian Blythe is the co-founder of the Costume Industry Coalition, which, by the way, has a new exhibition right now in the theater district. It's called Showstoppers, Spectacular Costumes from Stage and Screen. And I'm so delighted to have you here, Brian. Before we get to Showstoppers, because I want to talk about that, talk to me about what the pandemic has meant to your industry in particular, because I know you lost more than $26 million in gross revenue during those 18 months that Broadway was shut down.
Right. I think what people don't understand is the ecosystem that is the costume industry in New York City. Mm. We really are small businesses, and the coalition is made up of 55 small businesses that make, supply, and care for costumes for stage and screen. And so this cottage industry, which employs over 500 specialty artisans, we all shut down on March 12th of 2020. And then we tried to stay afloat for 17 months. So when Broadway was ready to turn the lights back on, we would be here. So it's been a long haul because we couldn't convert to a Zoom model. We couldn't shut down our shops and suddenly do costume fittings via Zoom. We had to be ready so people could create those costumes and supply all of the hosiery or the undergarments or make sure that Windsor Cleaners, the cleaner for Broadway, was still open. So So we've incurred an immense amount of debt over this last 17 months.
I can imagine. And good point, because your industry is so hands-on. It's one of the few things you really can't do via Zoom. So talk to me about how people in your industry did stay afloat, what kind of government assistance you were able to receive. And I know some people were stitching masks for during the pandemic time, but what else did they do?
Well, many of us in the coalition, you know, we did take advantage of the PPP loan program, but the challenge with that, it's a payroll protection program. We didn't have payroll. We had overhead. We had rent. And so for us to have a forgivable loan, it was really strange how we had to do the math to utilize that, you know, those the grants that we were given, because we didn't want to incur more debt. So some of the TV film work started to pick up late fall of 2020. But in terms of the Broadway stuff, it has been a very long haul for most of us.
You yourself, at your shop, you had to lay workers off. Mm-hmm. Were you able to bring everybody back, or did some people simply leave the industry?
Well, I'm the business manager, John Christensen, New York. He owns, we've decided that it's about the second largest shop in the city in terms of number of staff. So John is also my life partner, so we run our business together. And we had 52 employees on March 12th of 2020. Mm. He actually got COVID, was hospitalized. He's fine now, but when he got out of the hospital, we had to lay off all 52. Some of our employees actually got COVID. We lost one of our team members to COVID. It really impacted us. We are now back to, I believe it's about 41 of our employees are back. Okay. And we're at almost capacity in the space because we have to socially distance. So it's been really hard to sort of figure out the matrix of how we can get all the work done, but not have everyone back. We've also had people retire, and some people have left the industry.
Sure. You know, I feel like the costume industry is sort of the unsung heroes of Broadway, and I want you to give folks a little idea of what it takes to mount a show. I mean, I know we have Mrs. Doubtfire now on Broadway. The main actor in that show goes through 30 costume changes. Mm-hmm. Moulin Rouge, you said something like nearly 800 costumes in that show. So tell us what it takes to make that happen.
When we were trying to educate people about what it takes to take a costume from what we call page to stage, Catherine Zuber, the designer for Moulin Rouge, she puts everything on paper, but then it's really the costume makers who then have to interpret that and then create. For Moulin Rouge, she had 793 costume pieces, and then 180 costuming experts and specialists had to create those, supply them, and get them on stage.
Right.
When we tabulated what it took to mount that Broadway show, it was 36,000 labor hours to get that Broadway show up and running. So you can imagine the amount of work that goes into these shows, and then we have to maintain them under studies, and, you know, as casts change, we still have to create more.
Right.
And we still have to care for them. So it's a huge little cottage industry that does a ton of work.
Yeah, a lot of heavy lifting there. Yeah. So what about, we're all dealing with supply chain issues across industries. What has it been like for your industry to have the fabric and materials you need to costume Broadway?
We've lost some of them. You know, many of us use the Garment District, the historic Garment District, to supply our trims and our fabrics. Some of them have shut down. We had a bead shop that was right across the street from our shop. It's gone. So it really now is taking more time for us to find, you know, what we need. We have to outsource them. We have to find things online. It's taking much more time to get everything we need.
And before we let you go, Showstoppers right now here in the Theater District. Quickly tell me about that. And you've extended it, correct?
We are announcing this week an extension through October, an exclusive for you. But Showstoppers is we have over 100 costumes from stage and screen on display, and people can buy a ticket to help our recovery fund. We're millions of dollars in debt. We lost $26.6 million in gross revenue in 2020. So we're just mounting this to help, but also people get to see some of the people behind the scenes. They can go to Showstoppers NYC for more information and for tickets.
Well, and it's spectacular stuff from
it's
stage and screen.
Amazing.
You've got to go. All right, Brian Blythe, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
All right, and stay here, because when we come back, more news from that Apple event and the new iPhone after the break.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Yahoo Finance Live. I'm Jared Blickery. Well, let's recap what we learned at today's Apple event. And for that, we're going to go to the Wi-Fi Interactive. And we're going in order of the presentation. We started out with the iPad, the basic iPad. Now, this has 20% faster processor, better wide-angle front camera, can recenter you around your video calls, kind of follow you around the room. They're calling that feature Center Stage, and it has double the storage of the previous model. There's still a button or what's called a fingerprint reader. Got one of those on my phones, and still giant bezels on the top and bottom, and it's still $329. Quick look at the picture here, and that might even be a Logitech case there. Interesting for Apple. Also, it's going to come with iPad OS 15 support, support multiple accessories and True Tone display. And we got a post-event announcement that I believe iOS 15 is going to be released on Monday. So everybody watch out for that across the devices. And guess what? The new iPad mini, the mini has 5G and USB-C. And you can see that right here. There's that USB-C slot. And then the watch. This is an interesting device here. WatchOS 8 has a fall detection on bike and better e-bike tracking. And we can see that right here. Here's the watch. And here's somebody who apparently fell off their bike and Apple Watch is helping him out. Also, let's see here. We got another couple pictures of the Apple Watch right here in pink and black. And I think we're going to move on. The bezels, worth kind of noting here. Here's a feature recap. Apple Watch 7, 20% more screen area than the Series 6. Still have rounded edges still, but smaller 1.7 millimeter edge bezels, 70% brighter, full keyboard, IP6X dust resistance, same 18-hour battery and 33% faster charging. What I've noticed about the presentation today and some of the devices, the common thread is everything's getting a boost in the processor, the charging time, bigger batteries, and of course, the phone. It's all about the phone, isn't it? And that camera. So we got five colors for the iPhone 13, and the notch is 20% smaller. You can see the diagonal formation of the camera right here. And I just want to scroll up to some of the other features in the new iPhone 13. Has a ceramic shield, IP68 water resistance, smaller display notch, and now the cameras are diagonal, which I've been noting. Very bright as well, 1200 nits. 28% brighter Super Retina XDR display. And here are the colors, pink, blue, midnight, starlight, and product red. And we'd be remiss if we didn't hit the iPhone Pro and the Pro Max as well. I'm going to scroll up to that and get through some of the features. The battery life of the 13 overall, pretty good here. On the iPhone 13, it's promised to last 2.5 hours longer than the iPhone 12. And then the iPhone 13 Pro, it has 3x optical zoom, up from 2.5x on the 12 Pro Max and 2x of the other model there, as you can see on your screen. All right, stay tuned because we got much more with Alexis on Broadway and its reopening after this.
to the stage Mrs. Doubtfire, the Broadway adaptation of the beloved movie starring Robin Williams, is set to begin previews here on Broadway next month. It's going to officially open in December, or should I say reopen. Annalise Scarpacci plays one of the kids, Lydia Hillard. So good to see you, Annalise.
Nice to see you, too. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So just before the pandemic shut everything down, you were able to get through three performances of Mrs. Doubtfire. What have you been doing for the past 18 months?
I've been doing a lot of things, actually. At first, I was kind of like, this is the first time in about 10 years where I've had absolutely nothing to do. So I decided to find my guitar again, and I've been writing music. I actually have been working on an EP that's coming out this fall. So right around the time that we start previews, which is October 21st. So I'm so excited. And I've gone back to school, which is another blessing in disguise.
Right, because you've been a child actor on Broadway before Mrs. Doubtfire. I know this is your first principal role on Broadway.
Yes.
But you were in Matilda and A Christmas Story. So tell me what being in college has been like for you during this pandemic.
It's been a crazy experience. I actually am very grateful for all of my professors for welcoming me back to school. I had taken the year off to do Mrs. Doubtfire, and school was kind of a very difficult time for me going back into it because we were all mourning this loss of life that we had. So it was really, really a blessing in disguise, honestly.
Talk to me about the children who are on Broadway, because a lot of shows here employ young people. Yeah. And there are a number of them who are under 12 years old and unable to get vaccinated. What has this return to Broadway been like for them?
It's been crazy. I mean, I have to tell you, it's not easy. And as a former child actor, I know how hard it is because you're constantly thinking about, am I too old for my role? Am I going to grow? Is puberty going to hit me tomorrow?
Right.
There's all of these extra concerns that you have when you're an adult. You have, like, how am I paying the bills? Like, all these things. These are the things that the kids are concerned about.
Right.
And we are very lucky to have all of our children who are over 12. And we are very fortunate to have all of our children come back. We left as a family, and we're coming back as a family.
That's
great. And that's what Mrs. Doubtfire is about.
That's wonderful news. And, you know, you bring up a really good point. Sometimes people outgrow their role. They get too tall. Like you said, puberty takes hold. So I guess there's a segment of the population on Broadway where some children actors are not coming back to those roles, and this has got to be a huge disappointment for them.
It's awful. I mean, honestly, I can't even think about what that feels like, because to not know that your last day was coming, it gives me the chills. Like, I can't even fathom it.
Well, your last day is not coming. You're going to be getting back on stage next month. What have rehearsals been like, and what are you most looking forward to?
I'm so excited. We start rehearsals next Monday.
Okay.
I cannot wait. We're very, very close family. Our entire cast, our crew, from our producers all the way to our wardrobe supervisors, we really have become this close family in such a short time. And we've really known each other longer on the internet than we have in person. And it's kind of insane to think about it. And I can't wait to see all of their faces and just give everybody hugs and just to just stand there in a room with them and to sing and to create again.
Right.
It's a gift.
And
it
to
really
be
is.
In front of a live audience again and to have that interaction and that shared experience. What is that going to be like for you?
It's going to be unbelievable. I actually got to see Waitress last week with my mom, and being in the audience, absolutely unbelievable. I couldn't even believe it. And my friend Charity, who was also in Mrs. Doubtfire, was Becky in Waitress, and she invited me, and she was in tears. And to watch her on stage, and I was just in tears thinking about when we're going to be on stage together.
Right.
Unbelievable. I can't even
Now, Mrs. Doubtfire, of course, the beloved movie starring Robin Williams, a little before your time.
Yeah.
But did you see the film before you did this on Broadway?
Oh, yeah. It's actually one of my favorite movies. Ironically, the story of Lydia, my character, is surrounded by the relationship between herself and her father.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was the first person to show me Mrs. Doubtfire, so it's a really special moment that I can
That
have.
Was very apropos. Well, what's the one thing that you are hopeful for when the curtain rises on Mrs. Doubtfire next month?
That we stay open and that we keep continuing to make people happy and that we share our story with the world. I want everyone to come see the story. Our story is about family and the things you will do for the people that you love.
Annalise Scarpacci, best of luck to you.
Thank you.
I'm glad you were able to get a little college in there, too.
Oh, yeah.
Best of luck to you and the whole company of Mrs. Doubtfire.
Thank you so much.
All right. And, you know, I do want to note, though, that some shows are actually not returning to Broadway this year, like Disney's Frozen. Also, West Side Story will not be reopening. But there are six new shows coming to Broadway, including Diana, Tina Turner, the musical, and the Broadway show Six. So as you've seen over these past 2 hours, the Broadway community is ready to go back to work. All they need now is you, the audience. I want to thank you for sharing these past 2 hours with us here for this special edition of Yahoo Finance Live here in Times Square. I'm Alexis Christophorus, and we will see you at the theater.